Part 3, Chapter 5, in which a photo takes the captain, and Thales takes the podium. Thales was about to go shopping when Harvey and Prometheus arrived, and he convinced Prometheus to go with him. Left to himself, Harvey found an enormous red recliner and sank into its lap. As soon as he sat back, his attention was drawn to a group of black-and-white photographs on the wall. They were Nosevad originals, taken during one of the artist's sojourns abroad. Footnote. Dr. Sid Nosevad, born 1926, has an unusual gift for capturing the essence of a thing. A critic once asked him to explain a composition that was hanging in the Pompidou Center in Paris, and he responded, "Maybe I'm not very human. What I wanted to photograph was sunlight on the side of a house." Back to the text. As an infant, Anaximenes had met the photographer, and he had later prevailed upon him to become his Maecenas and support him in his university studies. Footnote. Maecenas, 39 B.C., was Rome's chief literary patron and advisor to the emperor. He gave Horace 5 farmhouses in the Sabine Hills, northeast of Rome, where the writer could work at leisure. Back to the text. Dr. Nosevad had even offered to send Anaximenes to study in Italy, but he had chosen not to go, the only decision he would ever regret. One picture on the wall was of an elderly gentleman walking up the steps of the Albaicin. Another was of a young lady counting coins in Malaga. And another was of a narrow street in old San Remo. As he looked at the last one, Harvey remembered that Mahogany might still be in Italy, and, thinking he would like to see him, Harvey rose from the recliner and stepped into the photograph. The day was warm and cloudy as he started up the cobbled street. There were voices coming from the open doors and windows, and sounds of plates and utensils, and in the distance he heard the leather shoes of children slapping on the stones. There were also many aromas, the most pleasing of which was the smell of baking bread that drew him around a corner, past the small plaza, and into the D'Angelo Pasticceria. One of the cakes was decorated as a sylvan scene that looked remarkably like a pasture on the island of Kerkira. It was full of sugary figurines, molded into the shape of she-goats, and Harvey was inspired to join them. He did not regret it. Here a goat, there a goat, everywhere a she-goat, and the captain a ravenous satyr in the land of milk and honey. Harvey didn't know which urge to indulge first, so he indulged several at once, until he became a veritable tornado of indulgence. In an instant, the quiet scene was transformed into an orgy of cake and frosting and ravaged figurines, and when the sugar finally settled, the captain was still indulging himself on a meringue blossom near the edge of a syrupy pond. He was so absorbed, in fact, and his face so full of frosting, that he didn't notice the figurine of Artemis bathing in the pool behind him. She was equally absorbed, pushing off from one side of the pond, slipping among the candies and molasses, dipping down to the bottom, then surfacing and letting the syrup run from her eyelids and drip from her hair. When he had finally had his fill, Harvey climbed off the cake and walked into the street. He was sleepy after his feast, so he returned to the edge of the photograph, stepped back into the treehouse lounge, and reclined again in his chair. Thales and Prometheus were now on the living room floor, and Anaximenes was with them. They were sitting around a circular coffee table. "Om," chanted Thales. "Om." echoed Prometheus. Om, echoed Anaximenes. Om is the bow, the arrow is the soul, and Brahman is the goal one sights unflinchingly, said Thales. Sights unflinchingly, echoed Harvey. The mind of the world is God, said Thales. The mind of the world is God, echoed Harvey. And my soul is the world, said Thales. And my soul is the world, echoed Harvey. To reach Buddhahood, said Thales. To reach Buddhahood, echoed Harvey. Avoid evil. Do nothing about life and death. Be merciful to sentient beings. Respect superiors and sympathize with inferiors. Have neither likes nor dislikes, and dismiss idle thoughts and worries. Avoid merciful worries, said Harvey. Sympathize with superiors. Have neither life nor death. Respect idle thoughts, and dismiss sentient beings as inferiors. Ah, waxed Prometheus, did I mention I am immense and immortal? We have everything, said Anaximenes, flopping down on the couch. We can think, we can wait, and we can fast. But, unfortunately, we have to work. Footnote. Thinking, waiting, and fasting are the three possessions of the Brahman that are enough to enable him to acquire anything. Thales and Anaximenes were custodians at the law library of the University of Utah, and their evening shift began at 10. They invited their friends to join them. Harvey and Prometheus roamed the building while Thales and Anaximenes did their work. Anaximenes, in particular, was supposed to tidy the stacks in the basement, but as he walked past the shelves, he realized if he cleaned one, it would make the others look even dirtier, and he would have to clean them all. He settled on emptying the waste baskets and calling it a job well done, and was just reaching for the last one when he spotted a manuscript beneath a table. He thought about leaving it, then reconsidered and picked it up. The unbound pages slipped from the cover and scattered on the floor, and he was left with the title page. The Adventures of Captain Harvey, Parts 1 and 2 by Roland V. Twelves. The Adventures of Captain Harvey, Anaximenes mumbled, and began to collect the fallen pages. He thought he'd better put them back in order, but before he could, he heard Thales calling, and he decided he would do it at home. The group was waiting outside of a tiered classroom on the main floor. It was dark when they entered, but a crack of light from the door enabled Thales to make his way down to the podium and turn on the track lights. "An offering," Thales cried, burning a rolled-up paper with his lighter. There was a moment of silence as the smoke rose into the lights, circling like an apparition waiting to take shape. Eventually it did take shape, and Thales picked up the pointer while the others found their seats. Stepping to the podium, Thales expressed himself with a clarity and precision quite uncommon to his nature. "The subject of today's lecture," he began, "is bad acting." He paused so the students could transcribe his words. "It has been said that bad acting is the intentional adoption of the various souls of the self." He paused until he could no longer hear the scribbling of pens. "Now, what do we mean by that? To begin with, we must remember that the word bad can be interpreted not only in its pejorative sense, meaning poor, evil, or not good, but also in its partial or complete opposite, meaning cool, marvelous, or very good." Okay. Now, in life, a person plays many roles. One plays the ruffian, another the cheat. This one is the merchant, that one the soldier, and still another is the fool, who is not so foolish as he appears. The majority of these roles, as we know, are determined by society at large, and we play them whether they suit us or not. Some of us perform quite poorly in these handed-down roles, for we recognize that they do not fit. We are too much ourselves and are unable to take them seriously. These misfits are often called bad actors in the eyes of the world. However, these same actors, though unable to play satisfactorily the empty roles of society, may be the most masterful of performers on the private stage, for there bad acting is not bad at all, but marvelous, and consistently truer to the selves of the self. So bad acting, interrupted Anaximenes, is just being yourself? Yourselves, corrected Thales. Now, the history of bad acting, as one might imagine, dates to the earliest life on the planet. Stammered Prometheus. I was wondering if you could give us an example of bad acting. Certainly, said Thales. In fact, a demonstration might be quite fruitful. At this, Thales pulled a collection of puppets from behind the podium and set them on the table. This, he said, pointing to a hook-nosed puppet with an enormous right arm, is the poor and downtrodden Karagiotsis. Next to him is his friend Hachivat, and next to him the opium smoker Tiriaki. A burnt offering! Cried Harvey. Yes, said Thales, ignoring the outburst and continuing his demonstration. As the performance begins, you will see that the puppeteer plays every part, and he must alter his personality to accommodate the character of each. However, his portrayal is always open to interpretation, and in over 200 years, no two performances of Karagiotsis have ever been the same. What the puppeteer must recognize, Thales continued, is that he is all men and that all roles are in him. Then he can select which ones he desires to play. The experience is not dissimilar in the play of life. The key is to always be true to your own selves, no matter what role you're given, to play your part with vigor and enthusiasm, to make it your own. For the act is not just an act, and you are the roles you play. Now, I will need some volunteers, he said, pointing to the three that were there. Remember, understand the outline, act in accord with its essentials, but do not be afraid to improvise. At first the group was uncomfortable with the characters they were given, but soon they found that any role enabled them to express themselves. Thales had them run through a variety of scenes, then switch roles and run through them again, until they could handle all the stock characters and began to create others of their own. Thales stood to one side, commending anyone who stumbled onto one of his true selves, and applauding any spontaneous expressions. At 5 minutes before 2 o'clock, the class came to a close. "Don't miss tomorrow's lecture," said Thales. "Building a sweat lodge in a tree."